Welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. In this show, we highlight people's stories, we celebrate your successes, and together we share strategies for talking about climate change. I'm your host, Peter Santoscano. Welcome to episode 49 of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This episode is airing on Friday, June 26, 2020. In today's show, we look at the power of imagination, something absolutely essential when addressing climate change. Sean Degg, a Citizens Climate volunteer in New York State, helps us to engage our imagination. He has a thought exercise that will give you a chance to travel to the future. From Appalachian State University in the USA, two professors talk about Climate Stories Collaborative. They tell us about the learning process of creating climate art. They also reveal how the coronavirus lockdown gave them a chance to model resiliency. Dr. Natasha Dejarnett, a leading environmental health researcher, will share her vision of the future. But first, a climate change communications expert updates us about what has happened since the last time she was on the show. Now, when it comes to creative climate communications, no other episode has influenced me more than episode 39, Envisioning and Communicating Climate Successes. In that episode, I shared a mind-expanding future imaging thought exercise conducted by Sean Degg. We also featured Blair Bazarich from the San Francisco Zoo and Hannah Pickard at Boston's New England Aquarium. They are both part of a group called NOCCI, N-N-O-C-C-I. Blair and Hannah stressed we need to pivot away from gloom and doom climate stories. Instead, we need to shift the conversation to the future, especially to the impacts of climate solutions. First, though, Hannah stresses effective climate communication begins with messages that are formed around our values. She shares two values that have been proven to move people to action.
Protecting the people and the places that we love, and or responsibly managing our resources. Those are two values that are very strong within American culture. When I say American culture, I mean really broadly. It gets reinforced in a lot of different ways. Protecting the people and the places that we love, and or responsibly managing our resources. Those two values also allow us to align climate action with other social issues, and the more we can align with and connect social issues together, the better we're going to be and the better we're going to find solutions that actually work for everybody. You don't go from why it matters to a laundry list of the things we're about to experience or are experiencing, because that becomes really overwhelming. We need to shift as climate communicators, as like a field, to painting the picture of what this looks like when we've achieved our goals, because it's so much easier to sustain long-term action when you know what you're trying to achieve, as opposed to what you're trying to avoid. How we center climate communications around the vision for the future that's not just one of survival, but is one where we would be excited to live in that. Oh, I actually want my city to, yes, be climate resilient. I'm not sure what that means. But then when somebody starts telling me, oh, that within 5 minutes of every person who lives in Boston, they'll have walking access to a park, that's a city I want to live in. Yes, I want faster public transportation. That's a city that I would want to make sure I stay in. The way I refer to it when it happened to me was that it like activated these kind of civic muscles that I didn't know that I had, or like that were just latent. And that just breeds more and more hope, which is what we need, and more community. It's our responsibility as climate communicators to be spreading climate hope, because otherwise we're in trouble.
More and more research confirms that a focus on a hopeful future based on solutions works. Hannah told me about some of the findings out of Yale Climate Communications.
According to them, hopeful Americans are more likely to talk with their friends and family. They're more likely to support transitions to renewable sources of energy and act civically for change. That's what we want to be seeing.
Hannah reveals another important reason for us to focus on a helpful future, especially for those of us doing climate work.
Thinking about climate change and thinking about it regularly is really difficult. And we want to invite more and more people into space where we're talking about climate change, but that also brings some mental health risks, that we're inviting people into a space, into a community that's suffering. We're seeing the effects of climate all around us, and we can't escape it. So being able to be in community, be hopeful, find ways to support each other, these are all things that help build resilience to those mental health impacts.
At Noki, they realize they need to do more than train people on how to be effective climate communicators. They need to build a supportive community.
Socially and emotionally supporting each other has always been very critical, especially to our training process. But in the last 2.5 years, we've really turned a light on that as a focus for why we exist as a member organization, because it's not just this kind of evangelist, like, we're going to train you, you're going to be the best communicator, you're going to know how to tell a story. It's really hard because I don't think we're good at talking about mental health or about the benefits of being with each other in this. That's new. That's been, since I think January, kind of my newest push beyond just we need to give people a vision for the future. It's like, you know, we need to start being really vocal about how hard this work is and the good things we get out of it personally in order to refuel ourselves. Otherwise, we're not modeling that for these new folks who are coming into the fold and have no idea how to handle it.
To learn about the work of Noki and their excellent online training programs, visit climateinterpreter.org. I also have links to Noki in our show notes. Sean Digg is a software engineer. He's also the group leader for the Mid-Hudson South Chapter of Citizens Climate Lobby. And he has a superpower. Sean helps us unlock our imaginations. We featured him back in episode 39, along with Hannah Pickard. Sean had us imagine a world without fossil fuels. For Hannah, this experiment had a deep impact.
And really changed how I help other people come to the table. And like, I instruct people to listen, not even to me on the podcast, but the last 10 minutes, because to me, that was a really important moment.
Dr. Natasha Dejournet also found the exercise very helpful. A frequent guest on the show, Dr. Dejournet has spoken about environmental racism and justice, the health risks for coal miners, and much more. In order to imagine a better world, we need to see the trouble we are currently in and to see it with clear eyes.
I want to acknowledge our brothers and sisters who are calling for justice in the loss of countless African Americans. I once again definitely want to acknowledge our frontline workers, our essential workers, those who are working to help mitigate against COVID, those who are ensuring that everyone's needs are met during this time.
When it comes to the current state of our world, Dr. Dejournet hears it captured in a song.
Marvin Gaye's What's Going On album keeps echoing in my head. And from What's Going On, just some words are standing out to me. Brother, 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 there's far too many of us dying. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. And then from his song, Mercy, Mercy Me, where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and the south and east. This is standing out to me as the current soundtrack. And these are beautiful songs, but they're capturing some heartbreaking times and still as relevant as when they were written as they are right now.
At my breakout group at the recent Citizens Climate Virtual Conference, I had the nearly 500 participants open up their imaginations as they walked through Sean's experiment. They got to travel to another time to envision a whole new world. So I invite you to take the next 3 minutes to let your creative mind wander, imagine, and dream. I share with you Sean's experiment. What will the world be like without fossil fuels? Then you will hear people reading some of the hundreds of responses I received from the participants in the online breakout session.
When we talk about what the future looks like in climate change. We often talk about all the bad things that happen, and that's important. That's an important part of the story, but it's important to think about how the world would just change. And a lot of these are good changes, and really like think through kind of all of our senses about what that would be like. Just imagine this whole new world. You walk out your front door. What would actually look different in a world where we've gotten off of fossil fuels? Like, as you look around, as you look at homes, what's different about them? How are they different than they are today? What's in your driveway? How's that different? How do you get around? What do you see in the world that you didn't before? And what's missing? And not just what you see, but engage your other senses. What does the world smell like? What smells are missing that were there before? What do you smell that you never could before because it was covered over in pollution? What does the world sound like? What does your streets sound like? How is that different than it was before? What new things are you hearing in your yard, on your front door, in your neighborhood? You know, what do things feel like when you touch them, right? We used to have light bulbs that changing a light bulb would burn your hands, and we don't anymore. Just everyday objects in our homes, outside, how do they feel different? How does just walking along the street feel different? And how does that make you feel? What are the things that we have gained? What are the things that we have lost? Just imagine this whole new world. Because if we can't imagine this world, we can't create it.
As we did the breakout session, people in the chat section of Zoom typed in what they imagined would be in the world and what would be missing. You won't hear those loud lawnmowers and leaf blowers waking you up when you want to sleep in. You won't see or smell the exhaust from cars, trucks, and buses burning fossil fuels. You won't feel it burn your throat and lungs or constrict your breathing. Parking lots will be cleaner too, without all those oil and grease stains. More importantly, though, a world without fossil fuels is full of wonderful things.
Family and friends outside together.
Seeing mountains that were once invisible behind the smog.
Bike lanes in every city and town.
Clear blue sky.
Clear blue sky.
Clear blue sky.
Children running and playing without asthma.
Rich, loamy soil that sequesters carbon.
Reliable and clean public transportation.
Windmills.
Open windows.
People walking.
And solar panels on every roof.
Birds. Stars. Fresh air. Bees.
Birds.
Quiet.
Bicycles.
Quiet.
Fresh air.
Birds. Quiet.
Stars.
Birds.
Quiet.
Bicycles.
Birds.
Quiet.
Bicycles.
Birds.
Cool.
Birds.
Fresh air.
Birds.
Quiet.
Stars.
Quiet.
Fresh air.
Birds.
Stars.
Flowers.
Birds.
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 Flow
Fresh air.
Birds.
Flowers.
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 People walking.
Flowers.
Cool, quiet, crisp air.
Stars. Birds.
Quiet.
Blue sky.
Stars.
Fly.
Bicycles.
Stars.
Fresh air.
Fresh air.
Birds.
Bees.
Bees.
Bicycles.
Flowers.
Children running and playing without asthma.
Stars. Fresh air. Bees.
And for Dr. Natasha DeJarnette, what does the future look like, smell like? What does it sound like?
In short, what I want to see is a more beautiful world. But not just that. I also see a healthier world. I see a world with less asthma, less heart disease, less complications with psychotropic medications and heat, less injuries. Less destruction in the places where we live, work, learn, play, and pray. That's what the world looks like to me. It sounds like Louis Armstrong's What a Wonderful World. I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. That's what I hear. But more tangibly, I hear the sounds of children playing outside, laughing. Free from environmental induced asthma, running around with not a care in the world, healthy. What does it smell like? It smells like fresh air. It smells like no toxic industrial fumes in our neighborhood. To me, that smells like possibility. We can't address climate change without addressing inequities. So 100 years from now, I see a more just world. I see our most vulnerable populations with enhanced quality of life. I see children, older adults, people of color, people who live in lower income communities. I see them having better quality of life because they are at the center of the decision making when it comes to addressing climate change. I see our frontline communities no longer living on the fence line of polluters. I see our coastal communities no longer displaced by sea level rise. I see former coal mine communities thriving with new well-paying industries. I see communities that were former burdened with injustice now achieving equity. Communities that utilize health in all policies framework and emphasize health equity for all. These societies will have policies that ensure climate action protects health and protects equity. All policies protect health and equity, and it protects our most vulnerable. And I see this underscored by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's wise words. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So I see that being what underscores how we move forward.
And what about you? What did this experiment stir up in your imagination? I want to hear from you. Feel free to email radio@citizensclimate.org or leave a voicemail of 3 minutes or less at 518-595-9414, plus one if calling from outside the USA. That number again is 518-595-9414. Many thanks to the folks who read the responses about the future. These include Liz and Petra, Ann Piper, Tammy Simpson, Sally Stewart, Christine Robinson, Kathy Habiger, Philip Davis, Charlie Sullivan, Sharon Elliott, Ann Evans, Douglas Alive, Ellen Wages, Wesley Jacobs, Wendy Slaughterbach, John Kelly Worrell, Carol Bates, Alice Jones, Steve Riga, Mike Cooper, and Kathy Massis. Now it is time for the Art House.
A lot of what I do involves bringing communities together to think about the meaningfulness of art objects and to create a sense of community around those art objects.
That's Jenny Carlisle, curator director of the Smith Gallery at Appalachian State University in North Carolina. Building community is important and so difficult during this time of coronavirus. Jenny and her colleague, Laura England, a senior lecturer, told me that their campus is situated in a perfect spot, something they especially appreciate during this time of coronavirus lockdown.
Being outside and surrounded by things that are growing and recognizing that though my human community is very much separate for me in tangible physical ways, the rest of the community of life that I'm a part of is here as ever. And that part hasn't changed. And that's been some solace for me in the roller coaster of emotions that we all have during the coronavirus pandemic.
Jenny and Laura are part of the Climate Stories Collaborative.
This project was envisioned as a learning community made up of students and faculty from all over campus, in which we are together learning how to be better climate communicators, using all forms of creative expression. We use the word story as an umbrella term for all forms of creative expression to better engage the broader public, to communicate in a way that is more personal and accessible and relatable, and try to reach members of our community and beyond who aren't necessarily going to get excited about the science and the policy and the politics of climate change. We went from a small group of faculty, probably seven or so of us sat around the first table, envisioned the Climate Stories Collaborative, to over 75 now, including faculty members in the College of Education, the College of Business, the College of Fine and Applied Arts, the College of Arts and Sciences. Really, we're represented all over campus.
While many of the students end each cycle with completed pieces of art, Jenny explains that the process needed to produce the art is the primary goal.
The things that people are making through the project are really an extension of that learning. And the thing that we're most interested in through Climate Stories is the learning itself. The ways that students can think about climate change to find ways to be with its kind of more abstract dimensions, to think about ways to process that on a personal and an internal level is really the most important part of the project. One of the things that's been interesting has been to think about what they're getting out of participating in these assignments, because they are from many different backgrounds. These are not students necessarily that are in the sciences, although we do have some students who are in the sciences. It's a way for them to process what these issues are, to make them less abstract, to make them more personal. All of that seems to be what they get out of it the most.
At the end of each school year, the Climate Stories Collaborative hosts a showcase for student artists.
This year, we've had 35 classes that have produced work for this annual showcase that we do, with over 100 students being involved in the production of projects that were featured through the showcase.
This provides them an opportunity to communicate to the wider public in a large gallery space. Laura explains that in the past, students, faculty, and community members mingled in the gallery to view the art and to see performances.
In previous years, we've held the event on First Friday which in our town in Boone, First Friday is an art crawl. Members of our community who are already traveling from gallery to another art location stopped in.
Because of coronavirus, the school closed and they also had to cancel the showcase. But like so many others, they adapted and took the showcase online.
One thing that's wonderful about having a digital exhibition is that the audience is not geographically bounded. We, you know, quickly pivoted and moved to this online format on Instagram.
As a curator, Jenny initially worried about creating a virtual showcase, but quickly saw multiple benefits.
I've been really impressed by how well this work is translated to a digital environment. It's cleaner than I would have guessed. Through having these projects featured, I was really reminded that community is so important to the work we do, and that even though we couldn't physically gather, this project, moving it online, was important for having our community be able to still have like a gathering place together. I have complicated feelings about it because of the way that it's actually a corporate platform that we're using for educational purposes. At the same time, we're able to like meet the members of our community kind of where they are in their own homes and their daily lives. The presence of that community through the platform has just tripled through just this past year. That the ways that people are posting on each other's projects and giving these like moments of encouragement and appreciation, the way that as they're looking at the projects through this feed, you're really like focused on what's happening in these individual works in a way that sometimes when you're at a reception, you're kind of overwhelmed by the numbers of things that you're seeing. It becomes very, very social in that context. There's actually something that feels more direct and more intimate about the ways that people are engaging in this work. It's been really lovely.
Taking this step to go virtual also models an essential part of climate action, resiliency.
And the ways that we're called on in this moment to adapt and adjust the way that we think about these issues, that it's really important for us to be able to pivot more quickly and to be in a more responsive mode as conditions around us are changing all the time. It gave me a lot of confidence and gave me a sense of like hope for our capacity to make the changes that we need because of the way that I saw my own community rally so quickly and adjust so quickly to the new conditions that we had to work with.
Jenny Carlisle and Laura England are both part of the Climate Stories Collaborative at Appalachian State University in the U.S. state of North Carolina. To learn more, visit their site, climatestories.appstate.edu. That's climatestories.appstate.edu. And definitely check out their Instagram, where they're now hosting the virtual Climate Story Showcase. Find them at ASU Climate Stories. That's at ASU Climate Stories. I will have all these links in our show notes. If you have an idea for the Art House, please feel free to contact me, radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. Well, we've come to the end of our program. I hope your imaginations have been stirred and you feel more determined than ever to fight for a much better world. Citizens Climate Radio is written and produced by me, Peter Santoscano. Other technical support from Ricky Bradley and Brett Cease. Social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Monterano, Flannery Winchester, and Steve Volk. Moral support from Madeline Para. All of the music we use on the show is licensed unless otherwise specified. Be sure to share Citizens Climate Radio with your friends. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts, which includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher Radio. You can also listen at northernspiritradio.org. Join the discussion at our Facebook group page, facebook.com/groups/citizensclimateradio. And you can follow us on Twitter at CitizensCRadio. That's Citizens, the letter C, Radio, CitizensCRadio. And feel free to tweet at me directly at P2Sun, the letter P, the number 2, S-O-N. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog to see info about our puzzler and find links to our guests. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.